Isn't it delusion that will determine what the future will bring? And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line today Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who's certainly one of my favorite guests. He's taught at the university level. He's testified before Congress. He worked in the Department of Education during the Reagan administration. But he is certainly, in my estimation, the finest researcher we have today on this movement to destroy America and establish a one-world government, really a one-world dictatorship under a ruling elite. So without further ado, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, how are you, Dennis?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be talking about the latest posting, and you'll find it at newswithviews.com. In fact, you'll find all of the posting on the mental health issues on newswithviews.com. There's a special space there, a section where you can pull down all of Dr. Cuddy's writings. We do carry one of his books on mental health testing, and then we have another pamphlet, which is the first four articles in the session. But right now, what are we up about, 23, 24?
This one just posted is 28.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you tell us what you have covered, what you're covering here?
Well, in each of these, I try to have something about mental health and education and social control, because they're linked for the most part, and have been for quite some time, as part of what I would call the globalists or power elites' ultimate design to have a world government. It involves the monitoring of people and tracking them and conditioning them through education and an ability to use social control. The term social control has been picked up from a number of sources. There was a fellow named Ross, back 100 years or so ago, who had a book on that subject. He was a leading sociologist at the time, and he talked about, this is like 1901, about an elite that would exercise social control. And then some 30 years later, I have put in one of the parts of this series the fellow Max Mason, who headed up the Rockefeller Foundation, speaking, I think it was on April 11th of 1933, to the board of the Rockefeller Foundation, said that this is their goal, the control of human behavior, social control.
And I think what's so important for people to recognize, there really are elitists out there who want to control us, and if you read and study this, you find it all seems to come back to, so much of it come back to the Rockefellers, the Rockefeller Foundation, and their various organizations, all intent upon controlling we common folks.
That's right. It's the... It's the noblesse. I mean, the rationale is noblesse oblige, an old French expression meaning the nobility are obligated to guide the masses who don't know what's good for them.
And in fact, according to Congressman Dannemeyer, who told me that one evening at a meeting with David Rockefeller, when there were a number of congressmen there, they were all told that, you know, some men are born to rule, but most men are born to be ruled. It was just a very casual comment. But, of course, Congressman Dannemeyer remembered that and relayed it to me, and I think that's what it's really all about. The question is, who was born to rule and who is born to be ruled? And I suspect that this is the major motivating force behind it, so much of what's going on today, as they plan and they plot on how they're going to control the lives of the American people from the cradle to the grave. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, certainly one of my favorite guests, a personal friend. And Dr. Cuddy has taught at the university level, worked in the Department of Education during the Reagan administration, testified before Congress. He's a prolific writer, but he is certainly one of the best researchers we have into the field of what's really going on behind the scenes. Because if you honestly believe what you read in the newspapers, what you've been taught in school, or what Rush Limbaugh says, you really don't understand what's going on in the world today. Rush Limbaugh is one of the finest conservatives that money could buy. And you have to understand there's a conscious effort to control the people, whether they be right or left, conservative or liberal, Republicans or Democrats. The leaders of both political parties have a goal and objective. And that is a world government and a new world religion. And there is a conspiracy against Christianity today. It should be so obvious, but nobody seems to be able to see it. Except they hide what is happening in plain sight, realizing that most people are so absorbed in their own lives they cannot understand what's really taking place. So Dr. Cuddy has written a series on mental health issues, and this is number 28. You'll find them posted on newswithviews.com. That's www.newswithviews.com. And Dr. Cuddy was simply saying that many years ago, people who worked for the various Rockefeller foundations were talking about how important it was to be able to control the common people like you and me. Go ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. And they, as I indicated, the head of the foundation, Max Mason, on April 11th of 1933, made that statement to the board. He was saying the control of human behavior, social control, is our goal. But way before that, I think it was around 1901, Edward Allsworth Ross, who is sort of the, I guess you'd call him the father of American sociology, published a book by that that same title. And he said there's this an elite. And he said they form a knot, K-N-O-T, and a knot of tightly knit individuals who are about the business of social control. And so the idea has a long history to it. And what I try to do in these series, mental health, education, and social control, is touch on each of the three areas. And so this particular part, 28, begins with a reference, once again, I've mentioned before, thimerosal, mercury-based preservative that's been in a lot of vaccines. And I've referred to the dangers of that in the past, and a lot of people are saying, you know, why is this? Well, we know the drug companies, especially Eli Lilly, who's been the drugs maker. But
hold that thought right there. We'll be right back here with all of our stations. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Dr. Cuddy, and he was just talking about thimerosal. It's something that, it's a mercury compound they put into vaccines. We're told, oh, you shouldn't eat fish because there's mercury in it. A pregnant woman shouldn't eat fish because it could hurt the child within their womb. But as soon as they're born, we want to give them a shot laid down with toxic doses, 100 times the maximum amount of mercury. And why would anybody want to do something like that? Why would anybody want to damage the brains of our children?
That's an excellent question. I'll get to sort of another contradiction in a minute about that, because it's very apropos. But basically, in the past, I've mentioned Eli Lilly and the drugs maker, and I've mentioned, for example, that one of the officials, the CEO, Sidney Taurel, served on the board of President Bush's Homeland Security Advisory Council. But it's not just that. When CBS looked at this and wondered, you know, who was doing this, who was getting this legislation that was introduced back in 2002, because they wanted in Congress to block lawsuits against the drugs maker. You know, there were some cases coming up.
Oh, they mean that's when we were actually passing the Homeland Security bill, and in the middle of the night, why, of course, I think it was the chairman of the House at that time, they put this bill in. It had to do with the Homeland Security, but it really had to mean that Eli Lilly could not be sued for the damage they've done to generation after generation of our children.
Right. It was just shortly before, it was December 12th of 2002, just a little bit before Christmas, and Representative Dick Armey, who was the majority leader there at the time, before he was replaced by Tom DeLay, decided not to run. They asked him, CBS asked him, you know, who told you to do that at the last minute, stick this provision in there to block lawsuits against the drugs maker? And he says, Armey says, quote, they asked me to do it at the White House, end quote. And so CBS picked up on that and said, the CBS reporter said, quote, critics say the Bush family and the administration have too many ties to Eli Lilly. There's President Bush's father, who sat on the company's board in the 1970s. Then there's the White House budget director, Mitch Daniels, once an Eli Lilly executive. And then finally, the person I mentioned in previous parts of this series, Sidney Taurel, the CEO of Eli Lilly, serves on President Bush's Homeland Security Advisory Council. So it's not simply, you know, one person. Sidney Taurel happens to know somebody at the highest levels of government. There's a whole network going on there. And so the question I raise next in this this part of the series is, if you have thimerosal in a number of vaccines, all right, and what you find is that they've caused problems, all right, especially in children, and you look at the number of vaccines, you ask yourself, not only is this bad, but the number of vaccines in young children in recent years has really far exceeded what I had to have when I was a youngster back in the late 40s and early 50s. And so what happens is, the reason there's a problem with this is that the high number, especially, I mean, it's bad in itself, but the high number of these vaccines containing this mercury-based preservative overexcites, I guess is the word, the immune system, and that causes inflammation, which in turn harms development, especially mental development. And so the contradiction that I mentioned a minute ago that I'd be bringing up is, so here we have a case of these vaccines, and they're approved by medical science, supposedly, including the thimerosal that was in it, including the number, which is greatly increased. And this seems to be causing problems such as autism and other developmental problems about which these same medical scientists have expressed concern. It's almost like a problem is being caused, and then they're saying, my goodness, look at that problem. I wonder where it's coming from when they themselves have approved the stuff that's causing the problem, it seems.
Well, I think it's important for our listeners to realize that, according to the CDC, one in six American children has either a neurodevelopmental abnormality or a learning disability or behavioral abnormality. So this is an epidemic. I should also point out that here in California, since they've actually taken the thimerosal out of the childhood vaccines, the incidence of new cases of autism has begun to drop off. So there's a definite causal relationship. But don't you worry. When they took the thimerosal out of the childhood vaccines for the American people, children, they left it in the vaccines we're sending to the children in third world countries. Now, if it's bad for American children, why isn't it bad for children throughout the world? Or if it's all right for children throughout the world, then why did they take it out here in America? And, of course, the truth of the matter is they know exactly what they're doing. But they don't want the American people, or certainly the parents of the children in third world countries, the impoverished people, to realize how they're damaging the minds of their children. You say, who would want to do something like that? Those who want to control the populace.
Right. A lot of this has to do with population control. I mean, if you look at just about anything you can think of, fertility control, abortions, the equal rights, a lot of these efforts, initiatives, scientific efforts, legislative efforts, have to do with some type of control of the population.
And of course, certainly mercury has an effect on fertility. They know that, but they don't want the people to know that.
No, they don't. Although I remember back in the 60s, there was a Planned Parenthood document that said they wanted to put fertility control agents in the water supply. Would be a good thing they were thinking about at the time. And anyway, the effort at population control would mean you would have to monitor people. To control people, you have to know where they are, what they're doing. And so one vehicle of that, of course, is your captive audience of the schools. And that involves education. And they always have a nice name for it. So in this particular part of the series, I talk about an initiative that's come about under the guise of what's called school safety. You know, we have to watch out that there's not a lot of guns or knives in schools or people from outside or terrorists or whatever entering into the schools. And so there was an article done about a couple of months ago about iris scanning, and it gave an example of New Jersey grade school, but it could be coming to a school wherever your listeners are. And what it said was that parents who arrive at the school, you know, they're coming in to visit their child, to pick the child up, or, you know, visit the teacher in the school. What happens is they have a digital image of their iris is taken. And you say, you know, what? What's this coming from? Well, where it's coming from is a grant. There's a $369,000 grant. It's a project. And it comes actually from a research branch of the U.S. Department of Justice. Now, that tells you right there this isn't some little isolated shop in some obscure state just having some little experiment. If the U.S. Department of Justice is funding this thing, you better believe they've got plans to use this all over the place. Now, the software application was developed by something called IEYE Metric Identity Systems. But the point is, this is a Department of Justice-funded effort. This is simply a first step, and it'll probably be implemented through, you know, the old carrot approach. They'll dangle that money out in front of schools all over the country, and sure enough, the schools will take it. And therefore, you, whoever you are listening, when you go to pick up your child in the future, you're going to have an iris scan.
And, of course, this is simply another means of identification, like the fingerprint, like the DNA, like so many things that they're doing now, developing, so that they can track every individual in America from the cradle to the grave. And people say, well, if I haven't done anything wrong, why should I worry? And I'm sure there are a lot of people in Hitler's Germany who said that, during the Second World War and before the Second World War, not understanding that when you have evil, why, of course, they come after both the good and the bad. It was Solzhenitsyn, who was a firm supporter of communism, until, of course, he was arrested and sent to the Gulag. In fact, all of the people who originated the communist movement were, all but one of them, outside of Lenin, were actually executed. They were all killed, and they all died violent deaths. When you're dealing with organized evil, why, no man's life or family or property are safe.
That's right. And when you said one of the rationales that people give for not being concerned, and you're right, they do give this. They say, well, you know, I haven't done anything wrong, so, you know, let the government do all it wants to. They'll never, you know, get information before a judge to have a warrant to come after me. Well, you need to guess again about that, because if you look at the recently passed Patriot Act, if you look at Section 605, and there's a conference report. The report is 109-333. That's Section 605 of the Patriot Act, the conference report, House Report 109-333 for the reauthorization of the Patriot Act. What you'll see in there is a provision. And it says the United States Secret Service Uniformed Division can, quote, make arrests without warrants for any felony cognizable under the laws of the U.S. if they have reasonable grounds to believe that the person to be arrested has committed such felony. In other words, they don't have to get a warrant. They just have to have whatever reasonable grounds are to believe you have committed a felony. And the point is, not that you're guilty of it, they can make an arrest without a warrant.
And, of course, if you are critical of the government, this is the way it was in Hitler's Germany or, of course, in Russia. If you say anything, even if you told a joke about Adolf Hitler, they'd take you off to prison and you'd never be seen again. The same thing in Russia. And remember, of course, Russia from its very inception, the communist regime was financed by the American Federal Reserve Board. And if you doubt that, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, American Corporations, American Banks. Communism doesn't work. Socialism is totally inadequate to work in a civilized society, unless, of course, it has constant infusions of help and finance from productive countries like the United States. We created the best enemy money could buy. We have put communist rulers in country after country after country. Look and see how we're subsidizing and building up communist Russia, China today. And you want to tell me we have nothing to worry about? Why would our leaders support a country that is so ruthless? I mean, you know, they simply kill their political enemies and then sell their organs on the open market. Why would we support something like that? Why would we be transferring massive amounts of money to the communist China through the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, through the Export-Import Bank, through the East Asia Development Bank, from American corporations, from American banks, direct loans from from the American government guaranteeing loans to China? Why would we do something like that, supporting a ruthless, tyrannical dictatorship? Unless maybe our real leaders really aren't concerned about tyranny and these abstracts of ideas of freedom and liberty. Maybe they have another agenda. Well, Dennis, pick the story right up there.
Well, I was just thinking while you were talking about this, about the Federal Reserve and the Russian Revolution. This is in one of my books, Secret Records Revealed, that I think you're trying to reprint. And I'm looking back at the time, and this is a September entry, which is rather interesting. I believe it's from 1918. And the entry for September, I put it here, is Federal Reserve Bank of New York Director William Boyce Thompson contacts the J.P. Morgan Bank to give $1 million. And, you know, I mean, $1 million today is something. Back then it was even more so. There's, you know, probably, you know, $40, $50 million in purchasing value of his own money, of his own money, this one person, to Alexander Kerensky toward the Russian Revolution. And you know, it goes on what happened to Kerensky. But the point is, here's a person, a director of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, out of his own pocket, giving $1 million toward this revolution. And so this is an idea of how the power elite, as I call them, work. And picking up on where we were before the break about how they want to monitor us and track us and keep tabs on us, because they have to do that in order to control us. A lot of times your listeners will say, well, something, it may be true, but, you know, this source is sort of extreme. I haven't really heard of it. The idea that this is being done on a massive scale or any reputable publication would present something like this is far-fetched. Well, I would invite you just to look at the Los Angeles Times. Now, this is an establishment press. And if you just look at the January 12th issue, you can get it at your library or online, of this year, January 12th, 2006, there's a column in there by Laura Donahue. And the title of it is, You're Being Watched. And what you learn is the following. Since 9/11, this is what she's writing. This is in the LA Times. Since 9/11, the expansion of efforts to gather and analyze information on U.S. citizens is nothing short of staggering. The government collects vast troves of data, including consumer credit histories and medical and travel records. Databases track Americans' network of friends, family, associates, not just to identify who is a terrorist, but to try to predict who might become one. Remember total information awareness? It assumed that deviance from social norms can be an early indicator of terrorism. In 2004, the General Accounting Office, the GAO, surveyed 128 federal departments and agencies to determine the extent of this data mining. And what they found was 199 operations going on, 14 of which related to counterterrorism. Okay, 199, but only 14 related to counterterrorism.
And so all this talk about, oh, well, we want to just track down the terrorists, that is simply a cover for the fact that they're watching every American citizen, because the one thing they fear is that there will be resistance to their plans. And so they want to know who the people are, potential resistors, having nothing to do with terrorism. All the talk about terrorism is simply a cover, so the American people will not understand what's going on. And that, to me, is frightening when they lie to us, especially when a Christian administration will lie to the people about their real motives and real goals. And back in 2003, there's a book written by Lieutenant General William Odom called Fixing Intelligence, where he says, should the Defense Department or Department of Defense have dossiers on American citizens? And I would ask that question. Should the Defense Department have dossiers on American citizens? Should they have dossiers on all American citizens? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy was just talking about the fact that the government is monitoring not the terrorists, they're monitoring all American citizens, collecting dossiers on them. This has nothing to do with fighting terrorism, but they can't let the American people know that. As they monitor our telephone calls and our emails and our faxes, they're doing this for all the citizens. And now, of course, they want the justification for doing it without a warrant. And the president has said, I don't care what the law says. I am the president, and I'll do what I want to. And that's rather frightening. I would think the president would be subject to the law, but apparently this is no longer true because, of course, of the danger of the wicked Osama bin Laden.
That's right, and I want to reiterate that point I just ended on, that we've been told that we need a lot of this Homeland Security, Patriot Act, and so forth to fight the terrorists. But when the Los Angeles Times publishes this article, this is some obscure website from some, you know, extreme right-wing underground network.
Would you mind, who wrote that article? When was it published?
This is Laura Donahue, Los Angeles Times column. It's titled, You're Being Watched. It's January 12th of this year. And as I explained, there are databases kept on our network of friends, our family, our associates, And the idea is, well, you may not be a terrorist, but you might be some sort of deviant who could become a terrorist, and so we have to have these data mining operations. And so the GAO, you know, this isn't, you know, some private outfit with an agenda, some left-wing, some right-wing outfit doing its own tabulation. This is our General Accounting Office of the U.S. government. In 2004, they surveyed 128 federal departments. That's a lot. And what they found is there were 199 operations, data mining operations, and only 14, remember that, only 14 of 199 were related to counterterrorism. That's it. So this article goes on and says, well, what type of information are they mining? And it says what they're mining is your taxes, your education, your vehicle records, criminal, welfare records. That's just for starters. It also has digital data such as your travel, your medical, your insurance records, and DNA tests, if they're located there. Section 505, the article points out of the Patriot Act, innocuously titled Miscellaneous National Security Authorities. Don't you love that word, miscellaneous? They can do anything under that. That provision extends the type of information the government can obtain without a warrant to include your credit card records, your bank account numbers, information on your Internet use. In fact, Internet searches record things like your interests. That might be on there, what you're interested in, down to what exactly you read. There are various things on the Internet you may be aware of, faith forums or chat rooms. Those are great. You know, they mine that for data into your thoughts and your beliefs. They keep records of that. Email, your telephone conversations.
And I think it's so important for people to understand, they listen to every telephone conversation and every email, and they read every fax. And this, of course, is part of the Project Echelon. If you don't know about it, you need to understand it. They've been doing this for a long period of time. This has nothing to do with terrorism. It's been going on for 20 years. We have a great book called NSA, Big Brother is Watching You. You need to get the book. You need to read it. You need to study it. The book was written a decade ago, but the average American can't believe that the government would be monitoring him or violating their own laws. But we're no longer a government of laws. We are a government of a people who want to really believe in a new world order, the destruction of Christianity, and the control of the masses, and the destruction of those who won't go along with it.
Right. And a University of Illinois study, as part of this article they were talking about, found that in the last 12 months following 9/11, federal agents made at least 545 visits to libraries to obtain information about patrons, people who go into libraries. And the article goes on and says this isn't just data surveillance, it's psychological surveillance. The Patriot Act allows law enforcement officers to get, quote, what's called sneak and peek warrants to search a home, that's your home if they want to, for any suspected crime. And then they can wait months or even years to tell the owner they were even there.
And, of course, they can steal things from your home. So next time you're looking for something, remember the government may have been there. And, you know, our founding fathers feared government. They realized that government takes away freedom, and that's why they wanted to take the chains off of people and put them on government, and they limited what the federal government could do. Today, the government can do anything it wants to, irrespective of whether you're guilty or innocent. They could even send you to prison, as they have with so many people, if you'd like to get documentation on some of the people they've sent to prison, knowing they were innocent. Why, of course, that's covered beautifully by our good friend Rodney Stitch in his book, Defrauding America and Drugging America. So they send innocent people to prison, but you never read about it in most of your newspapers. Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay, what your listeners may be saying to themselves now is, oh, yeah, I'm sure they do that. But they wouldn't come into my house. I mean, they're just after these terrorists. Well, last July...
Hold that thought. We'll find out what happened last July here in just a moment, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dennis, go ahead. What happened last July?
Well, last July, what happened is a lot of people, when they hear this and they want to believe that the government is doing exactly what it says it's needed to do, we're uncomfortable with these sneak and peek warrants where they don't have to tell you until later that they've actually been in your house rummaging around for something. But, you know, we need that. We can't pre-alert the terrorist suspects. They might call Osama or somebody, you know, so I'm uncomfortable, but I trust my government, the Justice Department, to just use this very, very rarely and just to go after terrorist suspects. Well, what happened is last July, the Justice Department, that's our own Justice Department, told the House Judiciary Committee that only 12%, just 12% of the 153 sneak and peek warrants it received were related to terrorism investigations.
But of course they keep telling us that this is only for terrorists, and then we find out they've been lying. And if they'd lie about that, what else would they lie about?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so the article concludes by saying the FBI has used the Patriot Act powers to break into a judge's chambers and to procure records from medical clinics. Documents obtained by the ACLU recently reveal the FBI used other new powers to eavesdrop on environmental, political, and religious organizations. And that's an end quote, end of that article in the LA Times. And I repeat, this is an important article in the sense that it's not from some obscure publication. It's from a mainline publication that has some respect among people who are usually skeptics. The LA Times, and it goes on not just mentioning an opinion, but giving facts, like there are 199 data mining operations by the government, only 14 of which are related to counterterrorism, and these sneak and peek warrants that they get, only 12% of them are related to counterterrorism or terrorism investigation, which shows they're using it for many, many other things besides fighting terrorism.
And, of course, the question is, are they really fighting terrorism? Because we know with the Able Danger, where there five military officers came forward and destroyed their careers, admitting publicly that they were tracking Mohammed Atta before 911. And yet, when the Defense Department was asked to come up with those records, extensive records they had of Mohammed Atta, that all disappeared. Gee, how could that have happened? How could they lose all of those records? Five military officers attested to the Able Danger, government tracking of Mohammed Atta before 911. So it seems that they're tracking the terrorists, and then they destroy the records. I wonder if they destroyed them before or after the terrorist attack. Because if they destroyed them after the terrorist attack, it suggests they knew ahead of time and they did nothing to stop the murder of over almost 3,000 Americans. We'll be right back with Dr. Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy, go right ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, just before the last break, you were mentioning Able Danger, and I don't have that in my particular part of this series, but it's a worthwhile point to think about. And
explain to our listeners what Able Danger was.
Well, Able Danger was a secret project, and it involved not just one particular division in the Department of Defense. They had people from the Coast Guard and various aspects of the military, Army, Navy, and so on. And it's supposed to be fairly secret, and it was a data mining operation. They would contract out to various people who would get their information from individuals maybe in the Middle East or who were part of a mosque or a member of a mosque or something like that. And the reason it came to the fore was because there was an identification in advance, at least a year in advance, of 9/11 of Mohammed Atta.
They were tracking him and several of the other people. They were tracking him ahead of time. And yet, of course, the government has denied it. Five military officers have come forward and said, we were part of Able Danger. Yes, we were tracking Mohammed Atta. And the government said, gee, shucks, we never heard of that. Which means either all those five military officers are lying, or the government knew who Mohammed Atta was and did nothing to stop him, and he and his fellow terrorists, from killing almost 3,000 Americans.
Right. What I want just for a minute, just as an aside, I'll come back to this mental health, education, social control part of the series, is I would like to ask your listeners to stop what you're doing, whatever you're doing, just for a second and think about something. Years ago, let's say 50 years ago, if there was some incident in the news that you read about in the newspaper, some terrible, terrible problem, some leakage of classified information to the Soviets, what would happen is the press would vigorously pursue it, And you, the people, would be very much keen about it. You would be very wary. You would show extreme interest. You'd get that newspaper the next morning. You might call your congressman and say, who did this? And we want you to pursue this. This is for our nation's security and so on. Okay, if you got that in your mind. All right, next thing I want to ask is, when was the last time you personally heard about Able Danger? Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is a lot of people who listen to Radio Liberty are fairly intelligent people. They are very interested in these subjects. But yet, even it almost seems as though the public has been conditioned to react to news events and not react to news events when they're cut off, rather than diligently pursuing some important topic. If you recall, some months ago, Able Danger was all over the place. It was in the New York Times. Congressman Kurt Weldon was on the television nightline and about every time he turned around. And it was progressing. You know, another person would come forward, beside Tony Schaefer, another person would come forward. And we even got to this major general who had left the Pentagon, and I was, you know, trying to reach him, and he never responded. But the point is, here's another fellow who supposedly had a copy of this stuff before it was destroyed. Remember, supposedly a lot of the Able Danger information, because it contained information about private citizens, was destroyed. I mean, that's, you know, debatable. But the point is, even if that did happen, this major general in advance had received some of this information. And we were hot on the trail, and Kurt Weldon was going to get to the bottom of it. And Arlen Specter, you know, any day now, any day, was going to hold Senate hearings. And he delayed them a little bit because John Roberts' name came up. But, you know, trust me, as soon as this is over, we're going to hit this thing. We're going to find out for sure if there are other copies of this map out there. I mean, there were several contractors, not just one. Yes, sir, Bob, in a week or so, you are going to know, the thing's going to, you know, come right out in the open, and we'll finally find it. Nothing. It's like it died. And people just have moved on.
And but of course, the thing is, the implications of this are really frightening, because
that's
if
right.
They knew about the attack ahead of time, and then of course, Zacharias Moussaoui shouldn't have been on trial. The people who in our government who knew ahead of time and did not warn the people in the Twin Towers or do any of the logical things you would do if you knew there was going to be a hijacking, you would certainly arm the pilots. You would, you know, take the keys away from the hostesses, so on the aircraft, so people nobody could get into the cockpit. You'd have people from the National Guard and certainly air marshals on every plane. You'd increase security at the airports. You'd do all of these things if you wanted to stop the attack. And if you didn't want to stop the attack, you wouldn't do any of the things. And those people who knew the attack was coming should be tried for murder, not certainly right along with Zacharias Moussaoui. But we can't let the American people know that, because then we shouldn't have gone into Afghanistan, we shouldn't have gone into Iraq, and maybe we shouldn't be thinking about attacking Iran and Syria, because everything goes back to what happened leading up to 9/11. Did they know ahead of time? Somebody has destroyed all the records in the Pentagon, and there's nothing to conceal. Why did they destroy them? Go ahead.
Well, that's right. But the point I want to make, besides that, which, and you're exactly right, is when this thing just sort of died mysteriously and suddenly months ago, where were the American people? 50 years ago, they would have been all over the CBS, their local affiliates. They would have been calling Arlen Specter every day saying, well, okay, you promised. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? But today, it's like if the news media turns an issue off, the public, like sheep, just go along with it.
Well, now we're worried about the bird flu epidemic. Now we're worried about you know, so many other things. And so they focus our attention on certain specific issues to draw our attention away from other things.
That reminds me, in one of these, this book that you carry of mine, The Road to Socialism, one of the main things I put in there is a quote from our benevolent feudalism, the editor of the American Fabian Socialist Magazine at W.J. Ghent years ago. It's a wonderful quote. It's a rather long one. I put it all in there so your listeners would get an idea of what's going on. And what he said is, this is the goal of the future. In fact, Jack London, a noted author, said, that's right, this guy, Ghent, he's got it. He knows what the future plan is. And one of the points in this long quote about how they would manipulate us is, They said, if there's a problem, don't worry. We'll throw 100-some irrelevant issues out in front of other people to distract them, and they'll go merrily chasing after each of these issues and forget all about this initial issue that they were concerned about, and so we don't even have to worry about it. They won't hold us accountable.
And, of course, since they control the media, and you're never going to hear these things brought up on the regular media. And if you go from ABC to CBS to NBC every evening, you'll find they're all talking about exactly the same issues. Why? Because there's a master script. And that master script, of course, is to distract you from thinking effectively about what's really going on.
Right. And so, because we're getting sort of toward the end of the hour, let me jump on to the last part, which is this sort of social control and the power elite's ultimate goal, which I've described in the past as it's a world socialist government synthesizing Eastern communism and Western capitalism. And what I try to do is, rather than speculate, to give quotations by prominent people who are involved. And in this particular case, there's the vice president of the European Union Constitutional Convention. He was the Italian prime minister at the time, Giuliano Amato. And he was being interviewed by a major Italian newspaper called La Stampa. It's the one that used to publish Gorbachev's columns, too, some years ago. And in here, this is what he's saying. Now remember, this is the vice president of the European Union Constitutional Convention. He says, one must act in Europe as if nations were to remain sovereign in order to convince them to surrender their sovereignty. The sovereignty lost at the national level does not pass to any new subject. It is entrusted to a faceless entity, and those who are in command can neither be pinned down nor elected. That is the way Europe was made, too, by creating communitarian organisms without giving the organisms presided over by national governments the impression that they were being subjected to a higher power. I don't think it's a good idea to replace this slow and effective method, which keeps national states free from anxiety while they are being stripped of power, with great institutional leaps. Therefore, I prefer to go slowly to crumble pieces of sovereignty up little by little, end quote. And that's exactly what they're doing.
And that's what they're doing here in the United States. That's why they refused to enforce our immigration laws. I mean, in 1986, they promised that there would be no more illegal immigration, and they would enforce the laws and prosecute people who employ illegal aliens. Because that's what draws them here, because they're good jobs, good-paying jobs, but they refuse to enforce the laws. Because why? They want the illegal immigration. They want to be able to plague one group against the other. They want a revolutionary movement in this country. It's being financed in part by the Ford Foundation and by our own government, which funds LULAC, which is an organization for illegal immigrants, because the real goal is the destruction of our sovereignty and merging us with Mexico. That's what it's about. We can't tell the American people we're going to raise their living standards to that of the Mexican peasants.
Right. And so one way that you would, to use his term, crumble pieces of sovereignty up is literally with a hammer. And so I look for these sort of symbols that are used, and oftentimes you can get it looking at the Olympics. For example, this Winter Olympics that was in Torino, Italy, there was a TV announcer, and he said a, quote, shaman-like figure had this hammer, and he did. And he was pounding this gigantic anvil. You know, you wonder why. What's this shaman-like figure pounding this anvil for at the Olympics? Well, it was part of, actually, if you looked at it, a larger artistic display with people forming the shape of a heart. Now, why is he pounding this thing, the shape of the heart, with this hammer? And so what I asked myself was, well, where have I seen this sort of stuff before? And one of the things that I remembered is art is a weapon. That was an old communist slogan. Pete Seeger had, if I had a hammer, he was writing that as a communist slogan, that song, if I had a hammer. It was to raise funds for communist leaders who had been arrested, actually, under the Smith Act. And so I remember that Bertolt Brecht, a famous artist, there's like a little painting, a poster of this, and he says, quote, art is not a mirror held up to reality, but a hammer with which to shape it. And so that caused me to think again. Let's see, shape something is to mold it. And I remembered again, since the ultimate object of these power elite people is a synthesis into a world socialist government, the slogan of the Fabian Socialists, if you look at that stained glass window that they have, if you look at the top of it, it says, remold it nearer to the heart's desire. And so what you do when you see that, right under it is a couple of people, the founders, Pease and other, striking the world with a hammer. It's on an anvil, and they're striking it with a hammer. And so this is their remolding it nearer to the heart's desire. And if you look at where we are now, Americans tend to see ourselves as the center of everything. But if you look at Europe, most of the leaders of Europe are members of what's called Socialist International. They're vice presidents of it. And so we're a long way down the road towards this ultimate goal of synthesizing Western capitalism and Eastern communism.
And creating a world fascist society. This is really all about feudalism, isn't it?
Right, and they'll use the arts, or art, paintings, plays. In this stained glass window, you see at the bottom there are plays listed there, theater plays, paint. They'll use paintings, music, dance, TV ads, literary works, just about anything they can as part of this effort to remold the world on an anvil nearer to the paralyte's heart's desire, which is this this world socialist government. And so that's the ultimate goal of these people. And the Fabian Socialist is a major aspect in there. John Dewey in this country was a member of this Intercollegiate Socialist Society, as it was called here 100 years ago. And so they're constantly pushing us into that direction, more and more government control, using various mechanisms, whether it's a terrorist attack or the public response saying, oh my goodness, you know, we need the Homeland Security Act, we need the Patriot Act. And as I've explained earlier in this program, they're using it for lots of things besides fighting terrorism.
And I think it's so important that people understand what is going on today as part of a long-range plan to bring out a world dictatorship. And isn't it convenient we've got the terrorists now? You have to have an enemy. If you didn't have an enemy, the American people would never be willing to have the Patriot Act and have the government be able to search homes without a warrant and be able to monitor every American citizen, because every American citizen is potentially a terrorist. That's why we've got to monitor everybody, after all. It's sort of like, you know, people getting on airplanes. We can't have racial profiling. We can't simply profile people who are come from the Middle East. In fact, there are laws against that. If an airline were to do that, they face stiff fines and imprisonment. So we're going to monitor everybody getting on the planes. Any one of them might be a terrorist. That's why they've got to search your home and keep records on you. And this is what they do in every totalitarian society. And when they come for you, believe me, they will know everything about you. And you will either go along with them, you will spy on your friends. After all, if you don't spy on your friends, you must be an enemy of the state. Could that really happen in America? Well, it's happened in other totalitarian organized societies. And aren't they telling people that if you see something suspicious, to be sure to report it to the government? Go ahead.
That's right. And how convenient that this war is not a specific war against a specific country. It's a war on terrorism, which is sort of vague and global, and it'll never end. They say it may just be indefinitely. And so all of these provisions, these abilities that they'll have an excuse to use them forever. And so it's not something that is going to end very soon and say, okay, well, the terrorists are all rounded up, that's it, now you've got your rights back. And so ultimately, as you said, it's to end national sovereignty, and they have this sort of Fabian, slow, gradualistic approach. One of the quotations I give from the World Federalist Association, from the document called A Genius of Federation, where they're talking about how they'll do this, how they'll crumble sovereignty, is they say, well, we'll have various agencies, International Criminal Court of the UN, so forth. And then the final statement is, by means of these voluntarily funded functional agencies, national sovereignty would be gradually eroded until it is no longer an issue, and eventually a world federation can be formally adopted with little resistance.
But, of course, what most people don't understand, Dennis, is the spiritual force behind this. Would you touch on that in the few minutes that we have left? Because unless people understand that there are spiritual forces motivating everything going on, nothing makes any sense.
Right, and ultimately, if you look at this, let's say in a biblical sense, it's always a provision of good versus evil. It plays out in a political sense, in the way I would describe it is the difference between the values of the American Revolution and the French Revolution. American Revolution, you're familiar with. Well, a lot of people think the French Revolution is the same, liberté, égalité, fraternité. But by liberté, they meant license. This is do your own thing, do that which thou wilt. This comes right out of the Garden of Eden and Lucifer and Satan's temptation. And by fraternity, they mean a humanistic brotherhood. And by egalité, they mean a leveling of the masses under these philosopher kings. And it's driven by the dark forces. They wanted to overthrow church authority, not just the authority of kings, but any moral authority as well. So this is a constant struggle between good and evil.
And, of course, this revolution continues to this very day.
Right.
And that's what this is really all about, ladies and gentlemen. Behind everything going on, there are secret organizations that really want a world dictatorship, that are motivated, I believe, by truly demonic forces. And until people begin to understand that, so much of what's going on today really doesn't make any sense. Well, our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And hang on there, Dennis. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dennis, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up today's program.
Well, as I have indicated, I try through this particular series to deal with mental health, education, and social control because they're all interrelated. They're all part of an effort. You can put them under population control by the paralytic. But as you were indicating, a lot of this is ultimately a spiritual battle which is going on. It's played out on a geopolitical level. In terms of revolutions, or let's say, like I indicated, the French Revolution versus the American Revolution. But basically, what's driving the whole thing is this battle between good and evil. The same sort of arguments that Satan used in the Garden of Eden. Not a direct assault, but an indirect assault. He would, ask Eve, did God really say that? Did God really mean that? Are you sure? And then the same sort of tactic goes on today. People, if they're in school, for example, through values clarification, they'll say, down with Christian beliefs, all of you little Christian students. They'll question it. They'll throw up evolution. Science says this. Or, can God really be considered good if there's evil in the world? Let's clarify. Do you really mean it's always bad to kill somebody? Well, maybe there are situations in which it's okay. And they'll give these examples. The lifeboat game. Where they actually convince, and parents go along with, little Johnny sitting in the classroom deciding who lives or dies. There's a lifeboat, 10 people are in it. Well, there's only enough food for 7. We've got to throw overboard. In other words, kill. So you got this little 6-year-old deciding, well, let's kill the old minister. He's old anyway. And so what they do is present situations where they force people, in this case youngsters, to make decisions justifying, rationalizing, killing some innocent person. And of course, if you can do it then, it's just another step until you can kill this other person for maybe a slightly less justifiable reason. But don't worry, it's your decision. You are to decide based on the situation what's right or wrong for you. And I'm afraid this has become the new morality, and that's just the type of thing Satan would do. That's exactly the type of thing the game he was playing back in the Garden of Eden. So all of these things are a struggle between light and darkness. Now, some of these people are out in the open. You have Alice Bailey and her first books by Lucifer Publishing and coming out of Madame Blavatsky and Pike with his out-and-out praise of Lucifer. But some of them are more subtle. The ones who are out in the open, you can pretty well spot them, and you can reject them. It's these sort of sneaky approaches that they're using in public schools. They eliminate the Bible, but yet they don't eliminate values instruction. Well, if there's values, there has to be a different moral authority.
Dennis, we're out of time. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we've had Dr. Dennis Cuddy, certainly one of my favorite guests. If you'd like to, of course, get copies of this program, why, they are available through Radio Liberty. If you'd like to, of course, read his treatises, we do have 10 of them in a book called Mental Health. And, of course, we carry a pamphlet that has the first 4 of his articles out of the 28 that he's put together. Now, let me point out that we do carry his book, Fabian Socialism, or Road to Socialism. Excellent book. We carry his book, Cover Up, his book, the September 11th, Prior Knowledge, because there was prior knowledge. They knew the attack was coming. If you'd like to get a copy of President Bush's August 6th Presidential Daily Briefing, we'll be glad to give it to you free of charge. The title is Bin Laden determined to attack in the United States. So how could they say they didn't know the attack was coming here? How could the FBI testify under oath that they thought the attack was going to be overseas when they told the president on the 6th, Bin Laden determined to attack in the United States? Of course they knew the attack was coming, but how could they have justified going into Afghanistan and into Iraq and then into Syria and then into Iran and then plunging the whole world into World War III? If it hadn't been for what happened. If you'd like to really understand the significance of what happened that day, we have three little pamphlets. They're called Foreknowledge, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. They're only $9.95. We have three pamphlets on the occult hierarchy that rules the world, and they're exactly the same. You need to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video or audio tape, shame on you, you need to get it. Ted Flynn's book, The Hope of the Wicked, is excellent. And then we have so much other information out there that will begin to introduce you into these truly demonic forces that are at work within our society. Iraq, The Untold Story is a talk we've gave, and there's a syllabus that goes with it. Sustainable Development, there's a video, four tape set, and a syllabus that goes with it. You need to get the information, you need to do the research. World Revolution is a video we have, and we've recommended to you. It has within it an interview I did with Ambassador Earl Smith. He was the ambassador to Cuba in 1958 when we brought Fidel Castro to power. He came to power in 1st of January 1959, but we brought him to power. We knew he was a communist. Then you'll hear Ambassador Smith telling you the story, and we'll tell you the story of the whole world revolution and how it really started, at least in modern times, in 1776. The same year that there was a secret society in Bavaria called the Illuminati. And we simply will take you into the backgrounds of the writing of James Billington, the Librarian of Congress. We carry his book, Fire in the Minds of Men. Read President Bush's second inaugural speech. He talks about fire in the minds of men. Well, we have the book he was referring to about the World Revolution. And then if you'd like, of course, to get our latest newsletter, we'll send it to you free of charge, where we quote the president's first, second inaugural speech when he said, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And we're fulfilling that ancient hope today, ladies and gentlemen. What is the ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled? Why, it is the new order of the ages. And what is the new order of the ages? You go to Google, you type it in. It's the Novus Ordo Seclorum. It is the world government. That's what it's all about. That's why we're going to war in the Middle East. That's why they have to have a third world war. That's why they're going to destroy our economy and impoverish our people. So we'll be willingly go along with the new world order, the new world religion. There are secret societies. They're working at the highest levels of our government. There are Rosicrucians and Theosophists. There are members of the Process Church of the Final Judgment. There are members of the Masons, 2 million of them here in America, who worship the great architect of the universe. But that's not the God of the Bible. And, of course, as you get into Skull and Bones, which our president is a member of, as was John Kerry, who ran against President Bush last year for the presidency or in the year 2004. How could that be? What are the chances that, well, that both people could have come from Skull and Bones? Pray for America.